Wait, wait, stop, that's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being, to be true to yourself and be honest with others.
Okay, today we have our guest. Our guest today is Wendy Lynn Johnson. Wendy is an energy healer, a Reiki master, and a life coach. She started teaching Holy Fire Karuna, is that how you say it? Karuna Reiki in 2021. And her goals are to continue to show people that they have the ability to heal themselves. So her work can be found on WendyJohnsonLifeCoach.com and also on SourceEnergyTherapy.com. She also has she's also an admin on Facebook page Empowered as Jehovah's Witnesses, and also I'll link her YouTube videos on under the show notes. So Wendy, please tell us who you are and what brings you joy.
Now I'm so many things. I think the greatest thing I am is a mom. I have 5 kids and 2 grandkids and a really huge family. That's probably the best thing I could have ever done is become a mom. And besides that, I'm a life coach. I'm versed in 3 different types of Reiki. I do laser Reiki, holy fire Reiki, and Yasui Reiki. I'm also a hypnotherapist. I'm a wife. I'm just really a lover of life. I love to encourage people to change their life from all the negative stuff and the negative programming they have and help them learn to think more positively. And so many people are so programmed by media and social media, and there's so much negativity out there that that's the first place their brain goes. So right. I really love to show and teach people different ways that resonate with them. How they can change that and shift their own energies to become a different person that makes them happier.
Definitely. I have noticed that when I've watched certain videos, because I also believe in energy work. And when I watch certain videos, I feel it's manifested body-wise. I feel sick, like in the brain, and it becomes in the body. Okay. So it's definitely what you watch makes an effect on you, and it's good to be mindful about that. Yeah. And so what is energy healing?
Energy healing is the source energy is God energy. You know, it's the energy that's all around us. We have meridians that run through our body and they get blocked. And if we can call in the energy within ourselves and around us, and we can all learn to unblock our own energies, the negative ones that get blocked in. And there's so many different ways of doing it, whether it be Reiki, whether it be acupressure, acupuncture, tapping, like emotional freedom technique, meditation. And it really comes down to what resonates with you and where you're at in life, because so many of us come from places where some of those things are real taboo. So I just really encourage people to try on any of the new things and see what really feels good to them and resonates with them, and take baby steps as you do it.
How about if someone doesn't either believe, they're skeptical, or they don't know energy healing? So if they encounter you, or if you would basically see something in them that they need to heal, how would you talk to them?
You know, I've had a lot of friends actually that have been really skeptical. And for me, I have gifted them just a session. Like I said, try it on. It really depends on the person as I talk to them and what they're, you know, if they're a mom or a dad or a grandma, what generation they come from, really how I would approach them and what I would use to talk to them about and how I would get them, you know, if they believe in God. A lot of people do, a lot of people don't, you know? So that can, you know, make a difference as to what, how I would approach the whole subject, I suppose.
Is energy healing the same as Reiki?
But there's many different types of energy healing as I'm learning.
Right. Okay.
We're all always learning. And I just recently was introduced to something called reconnection, which I thought was, it's a type of energy healing as well. And I'm learning more about that. And it's really similar, but it has less of the restrictions or less of the, why you say restrictions, just ideas as to how it works. But it all really comes from source, from God. You know, it's the energy that flows through the whole entire universe, through all of us. It's there for all of us. It's just knowing how to actually tap into it.
Okay. So, yeah, so I was going to ask, can anyone be a master? Do you have to get training and tap into the source first, or can you say, oh, I can do it?
For Reiki, there's to teach it, there's different levels. So you first learn one, Reiki one, which gives you the ability to get the attunements to work on yourself. It's really important that you clear your own meridians and your own energy level. And you can work on your pets and you can work on your plants. And by the way, your plants are amazing.
thank you.
Things like that, and practice, because it really is about clearing your own energy first before you can help somebody else. You know, right. Now if you jump in a dirty mud puddle, you're going to get dirty. So, you know, you got to clean out your own stuff, and we all have stuff, and we're continuously, I've been doing Reiki for a few years now, and I'm continuously working on my own self. And, but that's the beauty of it, is you can use it for that. And then there's Reiki 2, which is so you can send it distance. And then you do, if you want to teach it to other people, then you become a master.
Oh, I see. And is it possible to take people's energies? Because I've been called, I'm not so much into labels, but from what I've researched or people would tell me when they meet me, they would say that I'm an empath. And people would find me, they'll tell me all their stories, they'll cry on my lap and we'll chat, and they feel like, they said, I was meant to be, and I feel like I could talk to you and all this stuff. And back in the days when I didn't know these things, I would take all their baggage and I would feel so heavy and feel sick, like, not like, you know, sick. And so I didn't know why that was until I saw a pattern. And then I would avoid people because I didn't know what to do with that. Because I was like, well, I'm nice to talk to and all this stuff, but then I'm feeling sick afterwards. So I was just like avoiding people. And then later on, when I accept, I guess, the gift, then I had to learn to hear people out and not take their baggage. And I just leave it with them or leave it where they left it. Because it usually after they talk, they feel relieved and they leave, and then they would leave. I guess, I don't want to say they dumped it on me. You know, when they say someone give you a gift, it's up to you to accept it. So I was accepting the baggage, but not knowing that I was accepting it. And now I've learned to not accept it. So would it be the same with Reiki? Can you give someone kind of like a summary of 101? Like how it goes and what the process is.
So with Reiki, it's energy flowing, right? So there's a lot of controversy out there in different ways that it's taught and different, as time goes on, things change. So if you talk to somebody that learned Reiki 25 years ago, they have different ideals than some people that have learned Reiki now. But the basis of it is basically the energy flows through your hands, and it's like a faucet that flows out. You know, so if you've got a faucet of water that's flowing out, nothing's going in. So most people that do Reiki don't feel they can take it on. But as you just expressed, when people dump on you, you feel the heaviness that's left.
Right.
Right. And with that, for me, I learned in all the processes and self-help stuff I've done to cloak myself intentionally for me. Before I talk with somebody, imagine mirrors all around me so that it's reflecting anything negative that I don't want to take on back to them. So that I'm not taking it on, and that gives me more of the ability to be able to help them to be positive and to shift their energies. So like I said, there's controversy. Some people say you can't take it on. Some people say you can, but I have felt that same heaviness that you're feeling, because I have a lot of people that come to me that just, you know, they have a lot of heavy stuff that they want to take on, and I can be, what, like you said, empathic, and I can feel their feelings. And when you can feel somebody else's feelings, you have empathy and you feel their sadness and all those things. So I mirror myself, as I call it, to have those negative energies bounce off of me so that I'm not taking them on where they go. You know what? As long as they are on me and it's not harming someone, and that's the intention that I use, mm-hmm. I don't do that. Did I answer that?
So now I want to ask you, what was your childhood like growing up Jehovah's Witness?
You know, I had a really pretty good childhood for the most part. I had two parents and two siblings. I was Jehovah's Witness. We went to 5 meetings a week, and I thought we were all happy. And then I became a teenager, and life wasn't so good. There was a lot of restrictions. My father was an elder. He was the presiding overseer. And there was a lot of pressure for me to be a pioneer and follow all the rules and be the example for the congregation, for the church, to make my family look good. So, and I wasn't really good at that. I really didn't want to uphold that. I didn't like having those expectations on myself. But I really worked hard to do it. So I did pioneer. I did, even at times when I wasn't able to hold the title, I still put in 90 hours a month going door to door and talking to people about the Bible.
Wow. So what made you, so you're no longer a Jehovah's Witness, and what made you leave? Like what happened?
You know, I was in and out as a teenager. I was given a choice at 19 that I either had to marry this young gentleman or I was never to talk to him again. So we planned our wedding in 1 week, and we were both Jehovah's Witnesses. We're both regular pioneers. We were then disfellowshipped within a couple weeks. And at that point we were both pioneers. So they basically used us as the example of what not to be. And there's a term I was trying to think of, but I can't think of it now. So it took us 3 years to get back in. It's all either one of us knew. So we knew nothing but to go back to what we had. We had no friends outside of that church and that organization. So it took us 3 years before they would reinstate us. And we went to every single meeting. There was 5 meetings a week at that time. We had kids. We had 3 kids. And our marriage became rocky about, I don't know, 14 years in. And there's a lot of lying going on. A lot of experimenting of other things in life. And so my son gave a talk, a little Bible reading, and he's like 7, 8 years old somewhere. He was very young. I don't remember the exact age. And after that talk, everybody's asking if he's getting baptized. And I'm having a heart attack because I know that if you get baptized and you do any stray at all, you get disfellowshipped which then breaks that bond that I have with my kid. And I'm not alone, no longer allowed to speak to them. This happened between my parents and I. And I'm thinking, ain't no way in hell. You are only 6, 8 years old, right? And there, he's really young. So I'm like, ain't no way in hell. And they kept pressuring him. And I was having marriage problems. And after being disfellowshipped the first time, things never felt the same for me. I just felt like I didn't fit in. I was marked all the time. People were looking down their nose at me, kind of thing. And I'm like, this just isn't right. This isn't loving. And if you're going to preach that this is loving, then this just doesn't feel right for me. The energy was just so heavy. And I didn't even realize that at the time because I didn't understand energy at all. I just knew I felt out of control. I was so angry. I would like lose my shit at the drop of a hat. I was like, wow. So, and I knew that wasn't good for my children. And I'm running a daycare business. So I'm like, I got to change. Something's got to change. So I basically took my kids and left. I divorced my husband and decided we got to have a different life. Something's got to change. And I look back going, I even asked myself, wow, how did you do that? How did you find the courage? How did you, you know, I was running my own business. I ran a daycare for 23 years out of my home. I was licensed by Washington State. And it's like, what really, really, truly prompted you? But I really feel like I was guided now that I know more about other things, because it wasn't serving me and I was not happy. I was angry. And no matter how hard I tried, I was left with guilt. I was left with shame. I felt devastated all the time because I couldn't live up to the expectations of other men, other people, other humans.
So how did you come out of the guilt and the shame throughout your life? How'd you cope and get out of that?
You know, that was really difficult. The first thing that prompted me is I was shopping one day at a Goodwill and I was looking through all the book section and I came across, so anything religious was taboo, but I came across this cassette tapes, tells you how long ago it was, and it was on anger. And I didn't realize it was religious at the time, or I wouldn't have bought it, but I did buy it because I didn't realize it was religious. And I'm listening to it. And in this, she talks about how when you're angry, you're really just giving your power away. Because most often, let's like say, for example, I was angry at the elders and the religion. They didn't know I was angry. They didn't care I was angry. I felt horrible all the time. I mean, some of the thoughts I had were crazy and absurd. I could have blown them all up at days. I mean, there were times when I couldn't even drive by the building because I was so angry. And once I realized I was giving up all my power, they didn't care how I felt. They probably never thought of me again ever. I, at that point, started taking back my power. And I started doing more and more self-help, more research. At that point, I started doing research. That's when I found life coaching. And I signed up for a Law of Attraction life coaching course. Didn't know what the Law of Attraction was. Didn't even register in my mind that that's what I was signing up for. And I found myself in the middle of this course that I paid a really big amount of money for. And they're talking about channeling. They're talking about meditation. Things that I was taught are so wrong. So then I'm panicking. Oh my God, am I going to be struck dead because I'm doing, but that's really what started opening me up. If I hadn't have invested in myself to pay this money, I wouldn't have finished that course. But because I did invest, I actually went through with it and I learned so much and it started opening me up to be more open to look into other things like hypnotherapy, like Reiki. And it was just baby steps and learning a lot of, you know, I am affirmations and how much they help you, reaching for a better feeling thought. You know, it's all real simple stuff that you don't even realize how much it helps you and how it you internalize it daily.
It's great that it was basically in the word fate that you did it and then you follow your intuition And although you probably had doubt and you had fear about certain things, but you kept going through, go on with it, because then it saved you years and energy of like dealing with religion trauma stuff. So was your parents or was your dad was reproved because his daughter got this fellowship? Because I know, like, in my hall, when unless you, like, if you're under 18, I don't know how it goes, but like if your son or daughter get this fellowship, you get ranked down. What happened to your dad?
I was 19.
Okay.
And I was married. I got married. That was, you know, that was all part of it. I got married, so it didn't affect his status.
Okay, that makes
sense. And is very important to him.
I bet. So I wanted to ask. So both of you were married and you're still going to the hall and all this stuff. How did your husband, so I guess you're not married to that men anymore?
No, I'm not. We actually are good friends. And he's now an ex-Jehovah's Witness as well.
Okay, I was going to ask that.
Yeah, he's now an ex, but it took him a long time, like years, to come to the understanding. So we were both disfellowship when we got divorced, but it took a long time for him to come to the same understandings I have now, and for us to be able to come together and be in the space we're in. So we get along great. We do all our holidays together now with our kids, and our kids are grown. My personal youngest is 23. I have two stepdaughters that are 14 and 15. They're amazing. But as far as our kids together goes, they're adults. But we do get together and celebrate all the birthdays, all the holidays. And for all of us, it's all about family, because that's what I instilled in my kids as we started celebrating holidays, was this is about family. It's not about Jesus' birth. It's not, I didn't teach them any of that stuff because I really didn't know. It was just really important for me to build a really strong foundation of love for me and my three boys. And part of that is including their father. So things that bothered me, I had to learn to really just energetically overlook them.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to do a lot of the same things. So I have to give him kudos too, because, you know, none of us are perfect.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to ask you, so I do not celebrate holidays or any of that stuff. And me, my personality, I'm not someone who's against things, because there's that energy that comes with that, against and hating all this stuff. So I don't do these things. But I'm so accustomed to not do it, so I just don't. And when I try to do it to please others, I felt exactly that what it was. I was doing it to please others. And if I didn't do it, I was looked at by the world, people weird, and they have all these questions, and like, why don't you do it? So the energy feels forced, and put on a mask and pleasing people. And I like Christmas. I like looking at it, but I don't care to celebrate it because I'm not used to it. Same with my birthday. I think my birthday was celebrated the 25th birthday because my partner was like, it's 25, you need to, da, da, da. And I was like, sure. So I had fun. It was a party for me, but not a birthday party, because I don't have that DNA of holidays within me. So how, and as you mentioned, like, you don't do for religious purposes, but when you celebrate holidays or birthdays, what is the energy for you like, since you're not used to that? Would you say it's the same as a worldly person or different?
Well, in the beginning, I felt like I was looking over my shoulder like I was going to be struck down by lightning, right? But my kids were still pretty young. I want to say my youngest was like 6. So for me, it was more about helping. And now I may not do this because I believe a little differently now, but at the time it was more about helping them feel like they fit in with their peers.
Mm, right? Yeah.
Because that's where I remembered I would go to school and I'd get sent to the library for anybody's birthday, for any Christmas coloring page or activity they did. I'd have to go sit in the library by myself. So for me, it was relieving that fear and that guilt and that shame off of my children. And the only way I knew at the time to do it was to join in. And I was looking over my shoulders. My oldest son kind of was too. He was like 12. So he was old enough to, you know the difference by then. And, but that's mostly what made me start even considering celebrating the holidays, is I wanted my kids to not feel like the outcast like I did as a kid. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of morphed its way into these big, huge family gatherings that we have. And that's really what it's about for us.
Okay, that makes sense. And yeah, because we were forced to not learn anything as Jehovah's Witnesses, when I got out, I love learning. I love researches. I love anything new and different. And I ask questions, and anything new, I want to know more. And so I learned a lot about holidays too. So I was like, I'm not trying to yuck your yum at all. I'm just, and I'm like, oh no. And so I tried it because I had a partner for like over a decade, and it was, holidays is big in his family. And so I've tried to learn a lot of stuff, especially Thanksgiving. I did my best, like I showed up and smiled and did all this stuff, but within me there was a battle of like unease. And so personally, that's why I don't do them.
Yeah. Some of that can be programming. And sometimes we have to deprogram ourselves from the things that we were taught, because we were taught to feel that way. We were taught that it was so wrong. But like you said, you did your research so you know what they're supposed to be for. So sometimes shifting your thoughts around why you're doing it or what you're doing, you know. Thanksgiving is my youngest son's favorite. Like, it's his favorite holiday. And last year with COVID and all the stuff, we didn't celebrate it. And he was devastated. So, oh yeah, I know, right? So, and I really didn't even realize how important it had become to my kids until that happened, until COVID, and none of us got together last year. And I realized that's when I really realized that I had instilled in them it was about family. So mm-hmm. like I said, it's all what it is for you while you celebrate it. And when you start over, you have the opportunity to change your thought process around the holiday or around whatever it is you're doing.
Great. Yeah, family matters. And do you think family matters for Jehovah's Witnesses? I've studied with Mormons as a research, because I was learning, I did religious studies. And so I was just like, how, another great way to know religion is to be part of it, to know these things. So I went to like different religions and I was like, okay, I'm going to study with Mormons. I think like a month ago, that's when I actually stopped. And because they were pressuring me on baptism.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, that's the end of the road.
Huh? I studied with Mormons myself for a short time. I had a Mormon girl that I absolutely loved and could connect with on the same level, because they have a lot of the similarities as Jehovah's Witnesses that were
for
a number of years. She was one of my favorite employees because we could really connect that way. Yeah.
Wow. So it's great that you mentioned that. What was your thought process? Why did you study? Was it a research or because you wanted the truth?
I'm really big about family. And I was looking like, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses, Jehovah's Witnesses portray themselves to be these huge family people. But the reality of it is, once you are in and you're baptized, if family is that important, how can you turn around and shun them the way they do? And I realize they say it's for love, but that is not love.
Right.
They want you to think it is, but how the feelings and the energy that you project onto someone that's disfellowshipped by shunning them isn't love. That is not going to attract them back to that. That is actually really pushing them the opposite way. And the reality to that is most people who are disfellowshipped can think for themselves. And they've done something in the thought process somehow, somewhere, that they thought for themselves and made choices. And so that means, in essence, that the religion and the organization doesn't have control over them. So the reality of that is they probably just assume you not be part of it.
Right, right.
So if the energy is one that pushes them more away, they're going to really want to have it to come back.
That, yeah, certainly.
That's the way, yeah. That's the way I see it this many years outside of it.
Right. Yeah, I did. Well, the Mormons were talking about family a lot. And one thing I've noticed, the Mormons are very loyal. Even the ones that have left, they're still loyal to the religion. And they, I think I only spoke with three Mormons, like one who's still in, and the other two, they were, let's see here. Oh, one of them was willing to talk like right away. And the other one, it took months for him to actually think about it. And I actually asked him about that. And I was like, because Jehovah's Witnesses are ready to talk and they're ready. And the Mormons, and I was like, what's with the Mormons being, I don't call it secretive, but they're on the fence to talk about their religion. And he says something like he doesn't want to portray in a bad light. And I'm like, well, you don't have to portray bad light. You're just talking about what happened, etc. And he... And I asked him about shunning. He says there's no such thing because his reason was, I think he got married, but he, okay, so he's like gay, but he got married, but he didn't know what gay was. He knew like there was something is off, but he's pressured to get married as soon as you come back from your missionaries. Mm-hmm. And then so having children, married and all this stuff, and there's all this trouble in the marriage, but then later on you find out it's because there's not affection sexually. Mm-hmm. And so, and then all that thing happened in the church, and then he still goes, but like not a member. And then people are still friendly to him. And I think maybe that this is, they're not like best buddies, but they're still like friendly. Right. So maybe that's the difference between, maybe that's why, since they're not being shunned, that's why they don't want to talk about their religion, because there's not like Jehovah's Witnesses where you're being shunned, like people treat you bad and people stalk you. I have people, Jehovah's Witnesses, where they say the elders will stalk them going to the house. And especially when there's like married with children, there's like this pull, push and pull where their grandma will take kidnap their children. And I don't hear those things at moments. So, yeah. So maybe that's why they, still loyal to their religion even when they're not.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
The energy is different. It's not as desperate.
Yeah, and maybe too, because they're so good on family, they still think you'll be redeemed to go in the world, like their celestial stuff. So maybe they're like, okay, we'll give you time until, and another thing too, I've noticed, because it can baptize the dead. So basically, because I was, when I was talking to the missionaries, and I was like, so what's the point of joining if I can just like live my life the way I want with sin, and then you can baptize me and redeem me anyway. And then he says, that's a good point, but at the same time, we're here to experience, so it's good to like practice to serve God, whatever the reason is. And I was like, okay, I guess both make sense. But if someone can live the, if someone can go YOLO, why not go YOLO? Yeah,
I tried on several different religions and went to several different types of churches, trying things on to see what really fit for me when I left the religion.
So how come you're not Mormon now? Like,
if I can remember, it's been a few years ago. Something to do with some John something. It just didn't make sense to me. I felt like I was worshiping a man.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't remember the exact teachings, but for me, when that came out, I was like, "Oh hell no! Peace out. I'm done. I'm done with that."
It's so true. It's so true. And the funny thing is, with Jehovah's Witnesses, we are worshiping men in disguise.
Right.
If you notice, yeah. They say it's not us, but it's us. But yeah.
I was attracted to all the family aspects of the Mormons. And like I said, the girl that worked for me kept running in the back of my head. And so I was like, well, maybe. So that's why I started kind of looking into it.
Right.
And I know I've never found, I'm not looking at any one particular religion anymore, because I feel that there's a spirituality that doesn't need religion behind it. And I have learned that I can create my own tribe of people around me, and it doesn't have to have a title on it. And I love that. That's where I am in life, is I don't want a title on my life and who I am as far as religion. I'm a very spiritual person. But I am not religious of any, I don't condemn any one religion, because I think we all have to find our own way. And there is experiences we learn from everything we try on that
certainly
help us move in a direction.
Certainly. And you can tell me your general thought on that, because I've often thought that I feel that there's a spiritual people. I feel like, okay, so religion was an attempt to help people gain spirituality. And then somehow something got messed up. And so I feel like a lot of people, and I say a lot, because I feel like the spirituality people are a few. And I feel like, let's say just say a number out there. Let's just say 80-20. 80 people are the ones who religious, they do dogma and all this stuff. And I feel like those people need structure. And since they're not, I feel like we're all capable of connecting with the spirit, but since they're not there yet, or not willing to, or don't have the tool, they need religion as a structure, because, or else they'll go away. Because I have interviewed and talked to a lot of people who've gone through substance abuse, and when they go through AA, and religion is a big thing, and I often ask them, and I don't ask anymore because I've noticed this similarity, that they say, when you go to AA, religion is a big thing, because they said, you were not able or capable to do it yourself, so you need a higher power to help you or do it for you. And that's how they're now able to live life without substance abuse or mental trauma and all this stuff. But I've noticed when someone is, like, let's say spiritual from the get-go, or they learn to be spiritual, yeah, they still have a higher power, but they don't need all the structure and dogma and all this stuff, because they know they're part of it, so they can do it themselves.
Yeah, I agree with that. They need somebody to kind of take the lead when they're religious, and show them the way and the steps. And I think you can grow beyond that and become spiritual on your own.
Yeah, totally. And so why is your work important?
I feel that us healing our own bodies and not having to rely on so many outside sources, because if we can heal our bodies energetically, it heals us physically. So I'm not saying that, you know, I'm a doctor, or, you know, but,
sure.
But when we have less stress in our bodies, there's less sickness. And energy work helps relieve stress. And there's many different types of energy work. People work with crystals. You can work with, you know, meditation and going within and finding the calm within yourself. And that's also another way to connect with spirituality. Helps heal your body. It takes away some of that stress. And when we can heal and relieve the stress, there's less sickness, there's less cancer, there's less high blood pressure, there's less of all of that. So I feel it's really important for people to learn Reiki, especially, and this one of the passions I have is to teach it more and more as the next few years go on, so that we can heal ourselves in our own bodies, so that you're not relying on the doctors and things as much as you might be right now, because you can calm your own self and release the energy blocks, so you're not creating more sickness in your own body.